Hello and welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Edward Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, we have a very special guest. We have Daryl M. Daryl, thanks for joining the show.
No worries.
And we are here again live in Christchurch. And the thing we are very excited about is that Daryl has been plucked out of the audience and his crime was writing a very good question in this case. And so we've surveyed the audience.
We need to play these after the next events in case anyone realises.
Yeah, we've already thought about that. If you know anybody coming to the Wellington event, don't tell them. But Daryl's question was a good one and a common one. And Daryl said,
how to go from home occupier to investor.
Exactly. So we're going to answer that in about five other questions if we can. Andrew, take it away. Where do you want to start this?
Cool. So actually, this is something that I work with new investors all the time on, because people inevitably buy their first house for them, unless they're crazy like me and just buy investment properties. And so then they get to a stage where they've built up some usable equity and they're going to figure out, well, what's the point that I can actually go out and buy an investment property? And part of this is probably actually working closely with a mortgage broker, which was one of the other questions that we had. Why should you use a mortgage broker? Because part of that is to actually identify when you've got usable equity in your house. So usable equity, for any new listeners of the show, is that point that the bank will give you some extra money to do something else with. So under normal rules, if you own a house of $500,000 at the moment and you've paid your mortgage down to $300,000, the bank will lend you 80% of the $500,000, so $400,000, and you've got $300,000 of that already out, so there's $100,000 of usable equity. Now, we call that dead money because that's money you can use to do something with that you're not at the moment. Now, if you take that $100,000 out and you convert that to a 20% deposit for an investment property, that's $500,000 worth of purchasing power, which is pretty reasonable in this market. You can buy something decent for $500,000. So the first step is probably to identify if you've got any usable equity and or if you've got any other cash that you can use. Now, I was working with an investor just today who's based in Invercargill. Sorry for them. And so they'd bought a house for about $400,000 and they'd put in a 5% deposit. They'd managed to get Kiwi Bank to lend them 95%, which is awesome because they still have cash in the bank to be able to use for further investments. Now, what in their case they could do is they might turn their property into an investment property and then they might take their cash, they might buy a new owner-occupied property at 95% or 90% and do it all again. So that's the starting point. Now you've got to figure out what you're going to do as far as buying an investment and whether or not it's going to be in your city or somewhere else. Now, in that case, that investor was in Invercargill and they want to diversify. So now they've got to look around and figure out, okay, where's the place for the best investment? And that's where you listen to the Property Academy podcast and figure out where the next big opportunity is.
And I think the really interesting thing there is deciding to invest outside of their city, which, Daryl, I've got to say, is something a lot of investors don't typically do. Because if you're driving down the street and you see a house that you think, oh, that might be okay, that's what you're thinking about. So because you're in your, excuse the term, bubble, that's what people naturally start to think about. So it is important to start looking at some of the data we looked at in a previous episode and actually thinking, well, what regions are under or overvalued? And I know for a fact that Southland at the moment is about 8 to 9% above its long-term average. So perhaps may not be the best investment right now.
Yeah, and so part of this flow on from these questions that we got from our great audience tonight is, okay, using a mortgage broker, why would you? So I think that anyone that has the perception that a mortgage broker is just about getting the loan or just about getting the best rate, that's not why you use a mortgage broker. You use it for the extra skills and knowledge that they have to extrapolate the most amount of equity or cash to be able to go and repeat this process. And part of that is using non-bank lenders as well. And that was another question. So if the bank says no, where do you go from there? And so there's lots of non-bank lenders who are rising up now and doing a 90% loan. So something that a bank may not necessarily do for an investment at pretty reasonable interest rates. You might be talking 3% rather than a 2.5% or 3.5% rate. It's kind of okay if you can do the budget on that and it's still paying for itself.
Now, I want to throw this over to Daryl because I've just been looking at your data here, Daryl, and you've got a small portfolio. I hope you don't mind me sharing this with any other people in the room.
Yeah, that's fine.
Own a small portfolio. And so you've gone from being an owner-occupier to an investor. What was the major thing you learnt doing that yourself?
I'm looking at getting another property. I've recently purchased my first house that I'll live in.
Awesome. So that's where, as I said before, for me, it's about identifying if there's been any value increase in your own house. One of the great tools that we use with our clients or investors all the time is something like a CoreLogic or a Velocity, where you pay $50 and get an online assessment of your property. Now, if you bought well, often there will be equity in that to begin with, or if you've built a property and potentially, you know, in the 12 months that it took to build a house, the market's increased in that time, and then unlocking that usable equity to be able to buy another property is great.
Well, let's talk about if you don't have a property in that case, because we've got a number of questions here from people who are asking, how do you get started if, say, you're only on an income of $500 a week or a little bit earlier in the stage? Andrew, what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so again, I started out when I was working at the bank, and it was a fairly modest income at that stage, and I had a very small deposit. So my first property I bought, I did with a 5% deposit. When you are starting out on a deposit modest income, I think the best thing you can do is maybe partner up with someone. And whilst partnerships, you have to make sure that your goals are correctly aligned so that you're not investing with your 60-year-old mother and she might want to have a higher yielding property than you want for growth. You need to kind of figure out, okay, can I invest with someone and have this purely as an investment, and or find a friend who's a good builder or plumber or someone handy if you're going to be able to add value to a property really quickly. In my instance, what we did was we went in there and stripped wallpaper and painted rooms and all that ridiculous stuff that made very little difference, but made us feel like we were successful. And then we flipped that property back in the days before capital gains tax, bright line test, any of that stuff, took that money and reinvested. Now, if I were doing that again, I wouldn't flip, because you lose so much money to the IRD. You're much better off to add value, revalue, and then go back to the bank and repeat that process. And someone actually asked the question of, how do you do this, or should you do this before you go on an OE? Absolutely. So I work with a lot of investors who want to help out their kids, and often their kids are going through university, or they're going to go and do the OE or those kind of things. They might have a student loan and they want to help their kids get on the property ladder. The best thing that a parent can do, in my opinion, is guarantee the deposit so they can get started now, find a property where the contributions are manageable. So let's say they've got a part-time job, they're earning a couple of $100 a week, they take $20 of that and they put it towards an investment property, and mum and dad help them borrow 100% to get into the investment property, 20% against mum and dad's house, 80% in their own name, or in a company where they're doing this as a collective, which is completely possible. I know that we are actually working with an investor at the moment who, they can't actually do this themselves, and so dad, who's very successful, is going on the application to begin with. They're setting up a company to do this legitimately. He'll sit on that approval for as long as needed until they can put that in their own name. Now, what that means, if you're doing this to help out your kids who are building up a student loan and they might have $50,000 when they leave university, they will probably have enough equity in that property to sell that in 5, 6, 7 years' time, pay off their student loan, and maybe even have a deposit to get them on the property ladder for something for themselves. So I think that's a great way to get ahead.
But having said that, you probably shouldn't pay off your student loan in bulk, generally speaking, because it's interest-free. I want to talk about an instance where somebody actually came on the show and talked about doing this before their OE, which is really interesting. We've got Ella in the room somewhere. Give a wave right in the back corner. So Ella's a mortgage broker over there, and she came on the show just a couple of episodes ago talking about how she'd bought two properties before she went on an OE. I think it was by the time you're about 23. Have I got that right, Ella? Amazing story. And she did some quite clever things with student loans and interesting things like that so that she could get her deposit. In that case, I'll just tell you so you don't have to listen. She was getting her student loan costs as a student loan, not spending it on beer or hashtag fries, and said saved it and used it as a deposit, which was very, very clever, I thought. Now, let's wrap it up there, but please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Really helps us get the message out to more people. And if you want to learn more about property with Andrew and I, why not check out our epic guide to property investing? This is a 16,000 word guide we've got freely available on our website. Don't even have to put in your email address, which teaches you the basic details of property investment. And I know a lot of you guys in the audience tonight, some of you are just starting out on your journey. So it's a really good guide to just start you off and get you on that journey. I'm going to drop a link to that in the show notes. So tap or swipe over the cover art. Or if you listen on Spotify, just head to opuspartners.co.nz. You'll find it there. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Emma Knight.
And I'm Andrew Nicol.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.